else you got that you want to talk about?
Hey, it's Mullen. We already started the podcast because I'm not prepared, but Darcy just wanted to keep talking. I'm like, you're wasting all our talking. I'm just going to hit record and record the conversation. We can't talk about everything in advance. All right, here we are. We're talking about self-immolation, guys. In case you didn't see the video. Oh, by the way, welcome to Darcy Giroux, King of the North. Tim.
Happy to be King of the North, yeah. That's something the guys at work started calling me, so I thought it would be fun to throw it up there.
Is that because of the beard or because of your highly authoritarian tendencies?
Yeah, exactly. It's mostly because of the beard. Mostly the gray beard gives the impression of kingliness. And now it's mostly just because I've spent so much time in northern Canada, like all over the territories for work. And lots in northern Alberta
now what are you finding up the guys north there as you travel around up there, as you survey your kingdom, any changes? Are we losing permafrost? Is climate change disastrous for the north, or do you see lots of dying polar bears?
I haven't seen any dying polar bears. All the ones I've seen have been very well fed. Some of the places I've been, actually, you know, they put us through some training where wildlife training for safety reasons. And one of the subjects that comes up is polar bears. And they give us a bit of a history on how the polar bear population has been growing like crazy over the past half century. We got lots more polar bears than we used to. Most of them are well fed, and they become more well fed as... you know, there's lots of place like Churchill, Manitoba, and places like that. I mean, the problem they have is the bears are attracted to garbage, and tends to you know, there's lots of those types of problems where they're getting closer to civilization, and
they're also attracted to periods places. Too. I've apparently
that's what I've heard.
Woman who got eaten at Suncor. Tragic.
That was a black bear. Yep. I remember that.
Yeah. Ripped into that porta potty. Yeah. And bears, they're bastards. You want to kill them all if you can. And that's why I'm rooting for climate change. Change isn't doing a great job.
Yeah. I saw old Walter Block just put something out about physically removing the bears.
No way.
Because bears are a problem somewhere. And mostly I think he's trying to skirt the subject of his position on Israel right now. He's been
right. He's been
denounced,
rendered excommunicado by Triple exactly. H. Old Hans Hermann Hoppe has come out swinging against Walter Block. Oh boy.
Yeah.
If there wasn't drama and infighting in the libertarian movement, I mean, what would we do? Get shit done, or, you know, I don't know.
No, probably not. Probably not. I mean, I think the reality is the infighting in the libertarian movement is just that much, is that it's at that much of a higher level than infighting between, say, liberals and conservatives. I mean, or even between libertarians and either of those guys. I mean, we're actually narrowing down the subject of disagreement in a way has the potential to solve problems other than just partisan politics, right?
Well, I was thinking about this just as I was eating lunch here, and you know, your boy is on a calorie deficit again. I'm getting shredded for Mexico in April. Wife and I are planning a trip. I want to look good on the beach, but I'm getting grumpy, Darcy, and old grumpy Tim is coming out, and I'm thinking just dirty thoughts about fucking conservatives and fucking liberals. And you know, one of the things I was thinking about just literally 15 minutes before we started was how, if you think about it, Western civilization was built on libertarian principles. I mean, what Magna Carta, the sanctity of the individual, thou shalt not infringe on the individual, all that, that is libertarianism in essence. And then you've got these two fuckwad wings, liberals and conservatives, coming in and saying, yeah, yeah, that's all great, but we need to make some exceptions for X, Y, and Z. Oh, we can't have drugs. Oh, we can't have people moving from point A to point B, or, you know, marrying the wrong person or saying the wrong pronouns, or you start tacking on everything. And these MFers, they're trying to destroy Western civilization. And yet they're the ones that are in charge. And
yeah,
I don't know.
For sure. So, I mean, I think it is important. Like, that is a good point. And it's important to point out, I mean, I'm definitely guilty of being more sympathetic to the conservative side of things. And I find them more sympathetic to our ideas also. But the one thing that's always disappointing.
Hold on. I've been hearing that a lot, and I agree with it. Like, on a personal, I grew up around conservatives. I grew up in rural Alberta. Love rural folk, love the conservative ethos, but I also get along with liberals. But I'm not convinced. Like, yes, conservatives are the most sympathetic. They're the closest to us, I would say, in terms of loving the idea of individual liberty, I think. But I'm of the opinion that they might be the hardest people to convert to libertarianism. And there's a reason for that, that Jonathan Haidt talks about. Well, he doesn't talk about it from that perspective, but you know, I've been thinking about Jonathan Haidt's work on political personalities and conservative personality versus the liberal personality versus the libertarian personality. Your personality basically predicts which way you're going to lean. But one of the things that libertarians have in common with liberals is trait openness. In other words, we're open to new ideas and experiences. And that means we're actually willing to change our mind. And if you talk to most libertarians who, you know, seem just a few degrees off from a hardcore Republican conservative or something like that, you'll find that they might've been a progressive or left-leaning voter before their come to liberty moment. And you don't find a huge amount of conservatives. I mean, there's a few I can think of, like Tom Woods, but I know myself, I probably would have leaned more left in my younger years, open-minded. If I do Jordan Peterson's personality test on the big five traits, I'm very open-minded on that. So I don't know. I don't know what the best, and the reason we're talking about this, guys, is we're trying to think about what the best way to move the ball down the field is and whether I should set myself on fire for liberty or not. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Should I self-immolate to move the ball down the field? Is that going to help?
Okay. Well, let's get to that.
We can unpack a few things there. We'll go on.
We can unpack a few things there. Yeah. So when it comes to conservatives for me, and again, like for the most part, I live what would be considered a pretty conservative life. I'm a family guy.
Yeah, me too.
Not too reckless in my personal life. But the problem with conservatives politically is that they're always trying to win votes, from the left, from the liberals. And to do that, they are always moving the needle more that way. And you will never, ever hear anybody on the left side of the fence trying to convince a conservative that they are, or trying to persuade them in any way. Mostly it's just tactics of shame and guilt and making them bad and wrong for stuff, right? So I mean, in some ways I would have more respect for conservatives if they were more like us that way, in that they just really stood on their principles and didn't try to, you know, didn't hide some of their ideas behind their next election platform, right?
Right. Well, so that's why I guess I could have some grudging respect towards Bernier and the PPC, in that they are actual conservatives that seem to be standing on something approximating conservative principles, although one isn't 100% sure exactly what those principles are. I don't know what fairness means. I don't know what, you know, he's got like four words there and all of them mean something different to something else. At least the libertarian philosophy, you know, has, you can follow it. It's clear, it's concise, it's logical, it's robust, it's backed by scholarship. Conservatism seems to be all over the map. You know, and if I were to look at the PPC, for example, who are certainly populist conservatives, at least they're tapping into an anti-authoritarian route right now, which, you know, means anti-immigration and different things like that. But they're certainly not afraid to use the state. They look at the state as a tool to use to advance conservative values and preserve or enforce a nationalist culture that they would prefer, for example, right? And they do that through immigration things and through various other means, you know, banning drugs and legislating different things like that. So, but at least that, you're right, they're standing on principle. They're not chasing votes the way the Conservative Party is. And so,
And to not step over something too, I mean, the, you know, there's this discussion came up just last night at our Calgary Libertarian meetup group. So if anyone listening is in Calgary on the fourth Tuesday of the month, we meet at the Imperial Tap downtown. Come stop by and say hi. But this was a subject that came up just last night. And in, you know, kind of this, does the ends, do the ends justify the means, right? Or should we tread on somebody's individual rights to attain a, you know, in a conservative mindset, they would argue that, yeah, that we have to use the power and the authority of the state to create this great conservative country in Canada, right? Libertarians, then there is a, it's interesting because there is some of these guys who refer to themselves as post-libertarian, right? They seem to have developed some sort of justification that that kind of takes, you know, some again, Triple H's, Hoppe's writings and interprets it in a way that, yes, you should be able to violate a person's rights or something to, so that we can attain a libertarian utopia of some kind.
Yeah. Well, they adopt a kind of Machiavellian, a Burnham strategy of, look, you know, there's a reality called political power and, you know, failing to use it to your own ends is to render yourself obsolete or whatever. And maybe there's something to it. I don't know.
Yeah, and exactly. Maybe there is some to it. I'm not smart enough to really know. to be honest,
apparently these guys are.
Like other people
grasping for that ring of power, they seem cocksure. They know what's best. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. I'm not as sure. I guess,
but I don't know. I'm not as sure. Maybe that's why I'm a libertarian. I'm just not confident enough to run your life for you, Darcy.
Exactly. Or
maybe that's I just need to read the books they read, and then maybe I'd be confident enough to run your damn life for you. Yeah, hey, tell you what you can and can't put into your body. Tell you, hey, take the clock shot. Yeah. It's
Yeah, exactly. I have a hard enough time, man. I have a hard enough time getting through my own day without worrying about what everyone else is doing. I don't think it's any of my business. So I mean, and on that subject, maybe I don't know. As far as the other thing that comes up right after that comment last night at our meetup is, of course, you know, what is the best thing that libertarians should be doing? You know, this is something me and you have talked about lots. It's something that comes up all the time. I'm not, again, this is the thing. I'm not confident to answer for everybody else. I mean, I know there's some good advice that I got from Clayton Reeder, who is my co-organizer for the Capitalism and Morality Calgary conference. And, you know, his big thing is to keep a positive outlook and a good sense of humor about about everything, right? And I mean, and that's great. I'm not 100% convinced that political means are effective. I'm not convinced that even advocacy in itself is effective, you know, without a really strong understanding of
I feel like Justin Trudeau did more promote libertarianism in the last 10 yes. years than any libertarian potentially, you know what yeah. I mean? It's like we want to do the opposite of that, not that opposite
exactly,
of that.
Exactly. Oh, yeah,
that's libertarianism.
Yeah,
yeah. It's I mean, yeah. you know what I'm doing right now is and this will be an interesting experiment, is I was just I was just elected as our union vice president of external relations. So I'm in organized labor. I'm deep into.
So you're a dirty commie now.
Yeah, I'm a dirty commie. I'm going to be labor conferences and hearing all the propaganda and listening to it. And I don't know. I mean, look, I see an opportunity here to make a difference for my coworkers and my community by getting involved in this and taking on a formal position. And that is, namely, right now, the UCP, Daniel Smith, my community, my membership, the guys I serve with, all have kind of an overlapping Venn diagram. And I think Albertans have an interest in decentralization of the healthcare system. And this is an opportunity to get some heft behind that movement, you know, and, you yeah. know, and so I'm doing it for selfish reasons and for, I guess, because of my own work environment, but also because my family lives in these communities, my coworkers live in these communities. You know, I got into this profession to help people, and I've been handicapped time after time at every level by bureaucracy. And I want to try to get rid of as much bureaucracy as I can. And I see this as mm-hmm. an opportunity to do that. So whether
yeah,
I'll sure. be successful or not, that'll, you know, be the next question. But the things that yeah. I plan to do are create issues-based activism. So, you know, similar to what Rebel Media will do, here's an issue. Anyone who cares about it, send us your email address. And then there's a call to action. Write your MPs, do this, send us money, blah, blah, blah. We need to raise the, you know, do more press releases talking about the value we provide in the community and how that's being hampered by bureaucracy at the provincial level. You know, mm-hmm. meeting with government officials and hopefully even the premier, talking about solutions that, you know, because we're now operating not in a realm of abstractions and what would Libertopia look like, but we're looking at like, how could we advance this ball like 1 yard down the field, or maybe even get a first down here and
yeah.
march towards the end zone. Right. So my yeah. principles in mind.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, so, how do we yeah. even, how do we even play defense? I mean, that's where we're at. I mean, defend ourselves against these, forget about scoring at this point.
Right. We're getting hammered but here's an opportunity, right? And this is what I think yeah. libertarians can do. They can look at like, there's no one solution. Everyone's got different talents and different opportunities in front of them and different abilities to make an impact. This just happens to be mine right now. And, you know, and I think there is a big opportunity here in the healthcare, right? There, Daniel Smith is dismantling AHS. We don't know what the new system will look like, but the more decentralized it is, the better. The more we can stay within our communities and have local control over our own resources, the better it is. And so that's a step in the right direction. And then longer term, it's going to be, look, there's legislation that says ambulances must be part of the provincial system. Okay, that legislation needs to be reformed or dismantled. But you know what informs that legislation? Something called the Health Canada Act, which basically says the province must be in charge of healthcare. So something needs to be done about that. So long-term solution is change provincial legislation and change federal legislation. But right now, within the narrow confines we're operating in, can we move the ball down field towards something that's more approaching what you and I would like to see. And I think we can. So that's the opportunity I'm grabbing at right now.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I moved my my camera so it looks like you and I are the same height.
Want me to shrink
it, it's a little trick I use, but obviously you're
still
like a good couple of inches.
I thought you just grew me.
Yeah, that's right. But well, that's an interesting idea, because you have on one sense, you know, I think there's a lot of libertarians that are not necessarily against unions per se, as in having a third party collectively negotiate a contract with your employer, right? I mean, I think if that's what your union does, that's not a big deal. So I think there are if we forget everything else that, you know, we might have to say about unions, especially ones that lobby the government, you're in an interesting position, because you're part of the union, part of the or now you're like a union representative that is negotiates these things between the workers and their employer, which is ultimately AHS, right? Is that correct? Yeah.
Our employer is the county. So I'm employed by a municipality, but we have a contract to AMS to provide EMS. So, you know, some of the background things. So I think everyone would prefer that our municipality just controlled the EMS resources, right? So tonight, for example, I'm going to work. I'm going to be yesterday I was assigned to a fire truck. I'm fully a county employee. Tonight, when I go to work, I'm going to be assigned to an ambulance, which means that AHS can have their way with me. They can send me wherever they want. And usually that's going to be downtown Edmonton, picking up drug addicts while my community is, you know, left empty, because all the action is in the city. And by the way, the city is, AHS doesn't treat their employees that nicely. It's a very toxic work environment. And so there's a high rate of absenteeism, and that means there's fewer ambulances on the road there, which increases the pull, on us to do more work in Edmonton. Right now, you know, my solution would be, let's build a big, beautiful wall between my community and Edmonton, and treat it more like we do with how the fire departments operate, right? So a fire department will stay within its community and respond within its community. If asked, we'll go help out Edmonton or go help out a neighboring municipality if they have a big fire, but we don't do it as a matter of course every day. We have mutual aid agreements. And obviously if we're having to take our fire trucks out of our community and go into Edmonton every day to help them manage their call volume, there's going to be hell to pay. But if AHS does it, there is no hell to pay. There's no one that's accountable. AHS is the supervisor of our contract. They're accountable for their metrics. And so, you know, fundamentally, the philosophy around how EMS is managed and deployed needs to change. Right now, it's a borderless system. And I intend to bring the idea of borders to the system. And I do that by getting as many unions on board with us as I can, getting, you know, rural municipalities on board with it, getting, just finding advocates everywhere, finding the mayor of Fort McMurray, Sandy Bowman, was, you know, they fought and got their EMS dispatch back. So there's all these champions and all these like-minded people. And all we need to do is pull in the same direction, get together on these issues. And I think we can really actually impact how EMS at least is provided. Now, what will that mean? It'll mean that the big cities will fail miserably because they're no longer supported by satellite communities that are currently making it look like there's not a huge problem, a huge problem of absenteeism and toxic work environment. We're covering that up by constantly going into Edmonton and doing their work for them, right? So that's going to be exposed really quick. There's not going to be enough ambulances, and some heads are going to have to roll, and they're going to have to change the way they do things. So, I just look at it as a kind of an exciting opportunity. So it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds. And, you know, the other advantage I think I bring right now, and, you know, most people in organized labor that I know aren't ideologues, right? I can see as they get exposed to organized labor that they start to drift more leftwards and start to, you know, because they go to these conferences and there's a lot of Marxist ideas and kind of, you know, rah-rah left-wing ideas that disseminate down. But at their heart, none of these guys are ideologues. They are just trying to do a good job for the members and, you know, get them better perks and different things like that. So it'll be interesting to, you know, see how I can navigate that and actually fight for them in a way that lines up with my ideas and actually does a really effective job at helping our guys get what they actually want. And because it just happens to line up with what my principles are right now.
Yeah. Well, that is that's interesting. That's interesting. But then I guess it brings us back to this idea. Are you, how are you using the, not the power of the state, but the power of organized labor to meet your libertarian ends? Is there any ethical conflict for you in doing that?
I mean, what are my libertarian ends here, I guess, right?
Yeah.
You know, is it Libertopia? Yeah. I don't think that, I don't think Libertopia is even good enough. I don't think I would stop there. I think I'd keep going. It's just, and so a long time ago, I realized that my ends are always going to be more liberty tomorrow than I have today. Right. And right now AHS is impeding on my liberty and my coworkers' liberty and the liberty of my community. And this is a way to get a little bit more liberty. And so it's moving the ball down the field. And,
yeah, absolutely. You know, no, I hear you for sure. Anything, every little bit helps. I mean, I don't, there's a lot of people who would pick positions like that apart. I mean, the reality is I still pay my taxes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm as complicit in all these terrible things that the state does as anybody else, right? Not as anybody else. I'm not the one making these decisions. No. If I was, I would do it differently. But as far as your regular kind of blue collar guy, I mean, it's I can't fault anybody for taking positions like that. And you being part of a union. I mean, the guys that, I mean, I'm not part of the union, but like a lot of the guys that are in our company, the trades guys and stuff, there's a union in place, and that actually wasn't put in place by them. They didn't decide to unionize. I mean, for us, it was a strategic business move, because when you're bidding on a lot of big municipal civil projects, if you're going to build roads or you're going to do like water main upgrades, a lot of these places require either a union or, you know, some sort of equivalent metric of a union so that you can get these contracts. And again, so we're building roads, but how are
you? And it makes some sense too, right? Like if I were had a key project that needed to get done that was going to cost millions, you know, would I go with the cheapest guy who says, yeah, I can get her done? Or would I go with the guy that is going to get the job done within my budget, right? I'm going to go with the guy that's for sure going to get the job done within my budget, even if he's quite a bit more expensive than the cheapest guy, you know. And what are indicators that he's not going to get the job done? Well, he treats his employees well, and you know, there's a system of checks and balances within his organization that ensures proper management and stuff like that. Well, a union is an indication that that is in place, right?
That's all the language that the municipalities use to make that a requirement on bidding on some of this stuff. And not all municipalities do either.
Right.
Or not all provincial or federal governments do. And sometimes it's only on certain projects. And the reason it's not even across the board is the thing that they don't mention is because there are a city workers union that lobbies the government that maybe they should be having a share of that work. And if you're not going to have a union do it, we're going to kick up a whole bunch of dust. Right. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's fair.
So it's like, so in certain municipalities, Of course, I'm not going to name anything because we, you know, I don't want to be, I don't want that coming back to haunt me. But, you know, there would be like the local city workers union that will say there's a maintenance contract up for grabs on something. And the union either wants their guys to do it and maybe they can't, but they still set the part of their lobbying to the city is that it needs to be a union so that, you know, so that they're bidding apples to apples on things like that. Right.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. So, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. But so it'll be interesting to see how it goes. And I had a couple of commies reach out to me and want to debate. And I suggested that I debate with them, but only if we swap sides of the debate. In other words, me and my partner would be putting a steel man argument out in favor of communism, and they'd have to do a steel man in favor of libertarianism. And then we could compare notes and see how we did in terms how we felt the other side did at representing our arguments or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that would be interesting. I guess I'm curious what your best argument for are they legit commies or just like,
oh yeah, they're legit commies. Are they legit? Like, yeah.
Oh really?
Okay. No, I've had one of them on my show before, you know, for a three-part series on kind of debate to,
yeah.
And yeah, he's,
well, let's hear it. Okay.
Stalin was a wonderful man.
Does he? No, really?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And Mao. Yeah. They're great, great guys. You know, to crack an egg.
Okay. Well, don't talk. I would just not associate with those people, Tim, on any level. I mean, debating, if somebody wants to defend Marxism, they should be defending it from, an idea where they can pretend that, Stalin and Mao weren't real Marxists. You know right. what I mean? That they didn't follow the doctrine properly.
Okay. And, well, and that's not, maybe this, there's this, a chance. This guy has a completely different understanding of history than I do. You know, like his view is, it was the industrialists and the capitalists that killed all those people in the Soviet Union. Stalin did his best and actually saved lives, and you know, same for Mao. Mm. It was U.S. imperialism or something like that, that killed all these people, and these heroic figures of Mao and Stalin fought back against them. Of course, the propaganda we get over here is that they did all the killing and blah blah blah, but really communism actually worked over there and pushed back against the thing that was destroying their country and killing their people in the millions. I think essentially the kind of the argument he would make. And so, you know, what I wanted to talk about was with him was, is rent theft, right? I wanted to get into that with him. Like,
yeah,
you know, cause
yeah.
Like, and like the labor theory of value and stuff and talk about how he could possibly believe this stuff, like what justification, but he didn't even want to go there. He just, like, I got the sense that there was no principles underlying this. It was just essentially anti-capitalism or something. I don't know. But
right.
But I mean, I don't know what my best argument would be. I was thinking about that.
There would be, so, I mean, this would be a massive, you know, conspiracy. And I dig conspiracy stuff, like, for its entertainment value. But to say that it was industrialism and capitalism that starved those people, when there seems to be a lot of legitimate documents right out of Stalin's Soviet Union where directions were given to, you know, starve people in the Ukraine and send people to the gulag. I don't like, how did all the gulag guests?
How is that accounted for? Right. Well, I mean, he would say, look, this was a war, you know, the capitalists who were destroying the country and killing people needed to be dealt with.
So an actual war, not just a cold war. It was a civil war, right?
It's a civil war.
Yeah. Okay.
Essentially.
Okay.
And so the people that had to go to the gulags were, you know, that, and I'm, you know, he said like, well, cause my family went to the fucking gulags, right? I had people that ancestors that were killed, you know, my grandfather's family was all wiped out there in these work camps. And he's like, you know, I'm sorry, that's unfortunate. And I'm sure they were good people. And, you know, that there are casualties in war, the innocent casualties, but we wouldn't say that you don't fight World War II just because there's going to be some innocent casualties as a result of you fighting.
Yeah.
That's kind of the argument that he would make. Right. But
well, so is he one of these guys that like believes in the, in like the mud flood? Conspiracy.
I don't know what that is.
That there was I'm not it, like the Tartarian stuff and the mud flood. This was pretty new to me, but I don't need to get into it. But yeah. But it has to do with the boat only. I don't know, like even less than 100 years ago. Part of the Great War and even World War II was destroying this. All the bombing and stuff was actually meant to wipe out some of this past this great civilization that kind of the final part of it was still existing behind the Iron Curtain as they were killing people and stuff. It was still kind of a war that was going on to erase this stuff from history. And at one point there was this giant mud flood that covered a big portion of the earth in mud, but it wasn't that long ago. And and they've been able to suppress all this information. So, but I'm not sure how much of the mud flood Tartarian people buy into the I don't think they're inherently Marxist in any way.
Yeah, well, this guy was actually same as my wife. He's a nurse that works at a correctional facility, in decent shape, certainly doesn't get jibe with any of that woke BS that everyone's fighting against. He's like just a true believer.
Yeah, Stalin never would have either. Stalin would have. Those would be the first people sent to the gulags. Yeah,
of course. Yeah. He's a right wing commie, if that makes any sense.
Exactly. Yeah. For sure.
I remember what I was gonna. We were gonna talk about whether I should self-immolate or not. Have you seen this video of the soldier that a serviceman?
I've heard about this. I have not brought myself to watch the video of that.
I'll bring it to you.
Why are you gonna show it? Okay,
I'm gonna show it right now. Here, let's see.
Jeez, I don't know about this.
I mean, this is something to behold. Let's see if I can find it. Hold on. Where did it go now? Oh. Where did it go? Oh, that's Wendy's. Cooper. Okay. Stand by. I got to find it.
Okay. I mean, there's... The self-immolation as a political or a protest, and it's usually very specific. It's usually a protest against war, right? Against war. Here. And
are you seeing this now?
I'm not seeing it right now.
Oh, okay. Let's see here. Oh, I got to share it. Okay, let's see here. Share screen. There we go.
No longer be complicit in genocide. I'm about to engage in an extreme act of protest, but compared to what people have been experiencing in Palestine at the hands of their colonizers, it's not extreme at all.
This is what I'm doing. That I'd be like decided will be normal. 50% taxation. They got me coming and going. I need a passport to leave this so-called country. It's a plantation. Wake up, people.
So where is he? This is in front of the Israeli embassy.
This is in Washington, D.C., in front of the Israel embassy.
So, I mean, I'm so
camera down. He's got a cup. There's no hesitation. Just dumps himself.
Oh.
Trigger warning or something. Have some trouble with the lighter. Don't douse your lighter with the fluid. You got to keep it dry.
Can I help you, sir? Oh, free passing! Hey! Hey! Free passing! Free passing! Free passing!
Free passing! Man's on fire!
Man's on fire!
I mean, I don't know how he's on his feet so long. Standing. He's basically a skeleton. Guys, if that ever happens to you, stop, drop, and roll, okay? Do your boy a favor. Don't stand into the wind. And let her buck.
Get me a fire extinguisher. Get the fire extinguisher. Jesus Christ. Hey, get the fire extinguisher.
Yeah, well, what that one doesn't show is one guy's hitting him with a fire extinguisher. Another guy, a secret serviceman's got a gun trained on him. Just
Jesus.
Yeah, that's something else, hey? Like he
well,
how do you not fucking run screaming when that, like, I don't know. You know.
Well, you gotta be committed.
And I mean, he was a fair skinned guy too. I mean, he probably burns easy.
Well, is he not active Air Force, active duty US Air Force?
Yeah, I think so.
I think he is, right? I mean, I'm curious what this guy's seen that we haven't.
Right.
I'm curious what other stuff might come out of this, because I mean,
Do you think that this is going to have any impact?
Well, I think somebody did this last year. Also, did they not? Wasn't there a in the same place?
Like, I don't know.
I'll
tell you, when I was filming in Japan in
the Israeli consulate, December 1st, 2023, was hospitalized. This woman, a protester, self-immolated in front of the Israeli consulate in Atlanta, December 1st, 2023. So that's only 3 months ago. Was hospitalized for critical condition. Again, draped herself in the Palestinian flag and indicated to police that it was in response to Israeli apartheid at the time and Israel's alleged genocide of Palestinians. So, I mean, we're only a 3 months apart, basically. Wow. And I don't remember hearing about that first one until this happened. And I don't know that. I mean, I'm curious about this guy in particular. So there's a few questions that come to mind for me. I mean, first is his mental health, right?
Of course.
I mean, I'm also curious what has happened to him. Again, I'm against war, period. I'm against the state killing citizens, and we can't deny that that's what's happening in Palestine. I mean, there are innocent people dying, and if the war is against Hamas, you don't need to go in there and kill every Palestinian. I mean, but that is what's happening. I mean, there are a lot of people dying, innocent people and I don't want to get into the politics of Palestine, Israel, because I don't have enough knowledge on any of that, but you know, this self-immolation as a form of protest against war, it's almost you know, unfortunately, I guess people are almost desensitized to it. It's happened enough that you're like, to see it happen, it's going to be in the news cycle for a few days, and it's not, and I don't know that it's really going to draw the type of attention. Say this guy was acting, thinking that it might make a difference, and he's giving his life. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to be the case. I don't think it's going to be like, you know, when the what's his name, Trinh Quang Duc in Vietnam, 1963, I think, you know, when he sat down, and if you watch that video, actually try and find that video if you can.
So
he sat down he was a Buddhist monk, and this was in the middle of the Buddhist crisis in South Vietnam, where and I guess I just want to point out some of the parallels here also, that, you know, there's I don't want to say that Israel certainly isn't a puppet government, but there's certainly a government that is funded by you know, the US in large part, right? Same with the South Vietnamese government, right? Definitely the South Vietnamese government at the time was they were suppressing Buddhism. There was the Buddhist crisis, they called it, where it was illegal for Buddhists to
So he's got another sitting there cross-legged, for those who are listening. He's surrounded by monks on all sides. Another monk is pouring something over top of his head and then creating a trail back. Looks like there's a military man there just standing there watching. Everyone's, all the military is actually are moving the monks back so this guy can self-immolate without harming anyone else. He's sitting there in a meditative pose, and he's stoic the whole time. He's just cross-legged. That's just his soundtrack. He never moved a muscle, never uttered a sound as he burned.
Yeah.
And then he finally fell backwards.
At the time, that was like the first time something like this was certainly caught on video. And I mean, the Vietnam War was the first time that there were, you know, independent kind of footage like that coming out of a war zone, right? Let me just take care of my dog here.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, I mean, this is it's an insane video.
But at the time, I mean, that was one that there was a huge impact. I mean, that rattled people around the world, and it actually led to No Dinh Diem's coup, basically a US-backed coup. Because this whole Buddhist, suppressing the Buddhists and stuff, was too much trouble in Vietnam, where they're supposed to be fighting a war against the North and the Viet Cong. And then there was also this kind of No Dinh Diem, as a Catholic, was also waging this war against the Buddhists that just wasn't worth anyone's time. So they killed him a couple days with him when they killed Kennedy also. Of course, No Dinh Diem's assassination is rarely talked about. But I guess my point is that did at the time carry that type of political weight. I mean, since then, I mean, I think during the Vietnam War, there was a dozen or more Buddhists that self-immolated at the time. I mean, now we have, you know, in the United States, I mean, it's like there was all kinds of people throughout the 2018, 2022, 2006, Oh, that one was war. But there were a few people that did it in the U.S. You know, for yeah,
the other famous
climate
one that
climate
I
change, right?
Oh, okay. Well, this one was
the Arab Tunisia Spring. One. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's kicked off Arab Spring and a bunch of revolution in the Middle East.
Yeah.
So oh,
2010.
What a bullet in that guy's brain. He's that's Tunisia. That's a guy that actually needs made. Christ on a cross.
That's a guy that needs made. Did he actually live?
I don't think so. I mean, you're not going to live. You're going to live for a few days in horrible agony and then die.
Yeah.
Painful, agonizing. Yeah. Death. But that's yeah. It's terrible. When I was in Japan, actually, in 2014 filming, I missed a self-immolation by like 20 minutes. There had been, I was going to Shibuya Square where that famous crosswalk is. And I had heard from some people that there was a guy there that had set himself on fire in protest of something. I looked up what he was protesting, and he was protesting the Japanese military moving from they call the Japanese military, if I remember at the time, they call it a defense force. And there is a reason for that, which is ever since World War II, they were very, very careful not to be perceived as an offensive military doing any kind of anything other than a Ron Paulian protect our borders type military thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they decided it was time for a bit of a shift, and I think they're going to start patrolling international waters and exerting their sovereignty a little bit to some islands around the area or something like that. And this guy did not like that one little bit. And that's what he was protesting. Just a very modest kind of shift in their military stance. And at the time I was like, fuck, I need to find this guy. Cause I think he survived. I was like, we need to go see how he's thinking about this. Cause I mean, he was basically protesting in favor of a libertarian style military against mm-hmm. a more interventionist military. Right. But,
Yeah. I mean, I guess back to the point though, I think it's really a shame that, just from an anti-war perspective, that so severe a form of protest will likely go unnoticed for the most part. I mean, I know there's a lot of people who just, there's too many people that don't care about, and I don't want to say I don't care, but about what's going on in Israel and Palestine. But there's too many people that are going to watch that video for its shock value and not do anything, or not even remotely pay attention to what the guy is saying when he does it, or bother to look into it. And I'm not saying that to take sides on that war. And most libertarians don't call it a war. The reality is I'm not educated enough in the history and the policies of what's going on over there for me to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's terrible, but I mean, why, what do you want us to do about it? I'm getting taxed right now. I'm suffering from inflation, and you want me to worry about some war? Why that war? Not 100 other wars. Why not Ukraine? Yeah. Why not, what's going on in North Korea? Why not, 100 other places in the world where there's human atrocities going on? What do you want me to do about it? How do you want me to stop Israel? Like what do you want me to demand Justin Trudeau do about that? Right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to fucking demand that guy do a damn thing. You know, just stop taxing me. Stop sending my money to wherever. Stop sending it to Israel. Stop sending it to Ukraine. Stop sending it to General Motors when they need a bailout. Stop sending it to Air Canada when they need a bailout. Like stop taxing me. If you're going to self-immolate, I mean, Sean Strickland sent out a tweet about this guy. Sean Strickland, that crazy UFC fighter, is like, you know, like if you're going to self-immolate, what about the state of our country? Crime run rampant, open borders, unbelievable rates of taxation. Like there's shit here to protest.
Yeah.
Like protest some shit that we care about and we might get behind you, but this?
Yeah, what? Yeah, for sure. For sure. That is, I guess, and that's not entirely my point. My point is that, I mean, I want to have respect for this guy they obviously
huge balls either to something... not run screaming or like what's out. But what he should have done, and take notes, people that are planning to self-immolate. Notice how that Buddhist monk set off a revolution and got things done. He actually self-immolated in a way that got shit done. He was surrounded by he had a movement behind him, right? He already had a movement. He had all his monks there. It looked like the military or whoever those security personnel there were in there in support of him as well. They weren't trying to stop him. They were trying to protect everyone else from him and let him do his thing. He did some organization. He enlisted some people. He got some, you know, and then he sat down and set himself on fire. So do the work before you set yourself on fire.
Yeah.
Don't be one of these entitled self-immolators that think that they don't have to do any work. All they have to do is douse themselves with lighter fluid, withstand some pain for 30 seconds and die. And that's it. You got to do more than that for liberty, you dumbasses. Anyways,
don't self-immolate.
I'm in a calorie deficit.
That's right.
I'm self-immolating my body right now. Slowly.
I hate to laugh. First, I'm a little traumatized because I was actually trying not to watch that video. You made me watch it. So, and it's maybe I'm just not ready.
It's a Jordan Peterson technique.
Yeah.
It'll make you more resilient.
I don't feel good. I don't feel good laughing at your jokes about it. I don't feel good about myself laughing at your jokes.
Well, listen, a lot of it is coming from my therapist would probably say it's coming from a place of trauma. Cause one of my first EMS calls was a guy that I knew actually that basically burnt to death in his little hermit cabin. And he was just, he was just a carcass with exposed charred internal organs. His butt was the only piece of skin left on him. When I turned him over, his skull caved out and his soupy brains went out. So
yeah,
your boy's got a little bit of a different.
It's a coping mechanism.
It's a coping mechanism. It's clinical detachment. You have to have clinical detachment. If we're going to laugh our way to liberty, like CK Reader wants to do, we need to be able to develop these because there's going to be a lot more self-immolation, a lot more people being blown up and a lot more starvation and horror. And you can't laugh. What's life worth living for? Might as well self-immolate right now.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyways.
Let me tell everybody about the Capitalism and Morality seminar in Calgary, May 25th, and in Vancouver on June 1st. We're still the lineup is all booked in Vancouver. We're still booking some people in Calgary. You can go to capitalismandmorality.com for the lineup. There is a link to the event in Vancouver there also. Jayant Bhandari website. I'm not sure what his website is exactly, but he'll have his Vancouver event on there also. So
right on.
It's always a good time.
Yeah, it's a blast. I highly recommend checking it out if you can. I'll put those links down below, guys, so feel free to check them out. And awesome. Thanks for coming on the show, Darcy. You know, I should have mentioned I brought Darcy on as a co-host here. I don't know if that's what it was, or it was an interview or just a conversation, but we definitely got to have you on more often. And I had a blast chatting about stuff and horrifying
we gotta do
as well.
keep the horror. I'm not good with horror and stuff.
this but, is probably gonna get taken down.
but
if this doesn't get taken down, there's something wrong with YouTube. You're gonna take down improper pronoun use, but you're not gonna take this down. Shame on you, YouTube. Shame on you.
Yeah, for sure. But anyways, it was awesome, Tim. Let's do more of this. Thank you.